Welcome to the Object-Oriented UX Podcast, a podcast about tackling complexity head-on, gracefully organizing massive amounts of information, and designing scalable, future-proof, and of course, naturally intuitive object-oriented user experiences. An OUXer is a powerful blend of information architect, business analyst, facilitator, and UX strategist. If this sounds like you or what you aspire to, you are so in the right place. I'm Sophia Prater, UX designer, chief evangelist of Object-Oriented UX, and your host. Let's jump into it. What's up, OUXers? In this solo episode, I'm going to give you 8 tips on the C of Orca's discovery round. This is the third episode in my Orca series where I go over a step of the Orca process and give some insights on what I do in that step. So if you're brand new to the Orca process, it stands for Objects, Relationships, CTAs, and Attributes, and CTA stands for Calls to Action. Acronyms inside of acronyms. But if this is completely new to you, please go back to the previous episodes in this series and basically the podcast overall to get more of an overview of the Orca process, because I'm just going to be diving right into it. Well, I've got other things to go over first, but I'm not going to go over an overview of the Orca process. That's out there. You can also Google Orca process third diamond for an article that I have over on Medium that just breaks it all down. So I can't believe it's already September and I'm only on the third step. I started this series at the beginning of the year. So at this rate, it's going to be about 3 years before I get through all the steps in the Orca process. But seriously, I enjoy podcasting so much. I'm so happy to be in my little podcast booth right now. I really hope that next year I'm going to be able to go back to every other week, maybe even weekly. Oh my gosh. That is my hope for 2024. We will see. We've just got a lot of stuff going on over here at Rewired HQ. nervous laugh. So right now, our biggest focus is cohort 9 of the OUX certification program. That is cohort 9. I feel like I said that weird. Cohort 9 of the OUX certification program. We are enrolling now for our October 9th start date. And we're probably going to be closing enrollment on, oh my gosh, I can't talk today. Hopefully I can get through this episode. I'm saying words weird. I don't know what's up. But we're going to close enrollment on the 2nd, likely. So it's already shaping up to be a really amazing group of professionals who are just all in for some of the most rigorous and in-depth and applicable UX continued education that exists. So if you feel like your career in UX or content or information architecture or even product management could really use more science and structure, and if you feel like you just need better tools to wrangle increasing amounts of complexity, this course is for you. The Orca process, which you will learn inside and out, helps you play this UX game at higher fidelity. And I'm not talking about visual fidelity. I'm talking about complexity fidelity. And I'm also not talking about overcomplicating things, but learning how to look at the inherent complexity of a system, looking at that complexity straight in the face and fearlessly and saying, bring it on. So often we end up sweeping complexity under the rug to deal with later, where it is going to serve us so much better to deal with it early on to reduce rework. So as design director Ricky Z said, OUX has renewed my energy for my job. I hear this all the time. Like, this is making UX fun again. I mean, and what is more important than that, than your job? I mean, this is what we're here for, right? We spend so much of our time in our jobs, and if we're not having fun with it, why, you know, right? So, and if it can be more fun and there is a route to that, why not go that route? Okay, so I get this all the time. VP of Product Experience, Kristen G says, and I'm going to read this whole thing, so bear with me. Having completed the OUX certification program and begun to apply its methodology, I feel a bit like the Eddie Mora character in Limitless. I would consider myself a highly ambitious individual, but prior to OUX, I was coming up with solutions for complex UX problems in an inefficient manner. With exposure and understanding of the Orca process, I now put objects first, and it has transformed how my brain interrupts a problem, deciding what's really important and creates simpler and create simpler and more powerful experiences. With OUX and Orca, I am now firing on all cylinders. I love that. Thank you, Kristen. Senior UXer Nicole B. says, I have searched high and low for continued education courses in UX for years, and OUX is the first course I found with immediate and proven value that certified folks actually recommend and rave about. I wish I'd had OUX 7 years ago. Take the course, you'll understand. So, those are direct quotes. You can go to OUX.com/testimonials to see them, to meet the people that said it, to scroll through a crap ton more testimonials. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. I don't understand that saying, but it's just what came out of my mouth. The proof is out there. All right, go look at it. So if you're ready for this, if you're ready to fire on all cylinders and even find cylinders you didn't even know you had, if you're ready to get some of that immediate and proven value and even get renewed energy for your job, y'all, go to OUX.com/certification and get your spot while you can. We have limited spots, and our next cohort is likely not going to be until summer of 2024. So let's do this thing. But wait a second. We are here to talk about CTAs, the C of the Orca process, the actions that an object calls the user to do. So before I get into all my tips, I feel the need to really get clear on what I mean by CTAs and what I mean by starting with objects. Okay, and what some of those testimonies actually meant by starting with objects. So, first of all, a CTA is a thing that the user might want to do to manipulate an instance of an object. Things you might want to do with the object, okay? So we buy a product, we might also bookmark or star a product or compare it to another product. So product would be the object, and buy and bookmark and compare and review would be things that we do to a particular instance of a product. So this is Etsy. I might also create or edit a product. If I'm an Etsy content curator, I might create or edit collections and add or remove products from collections. So collections being another object. Okay, if I'm a traveler, I might reschedule a flight. Wait a second. Actually, do I? Or technically, do I move my trip to another flight? And wait a second, what is the difference? What is the difference between a flight and a trip and a ticket? All right, is rescheduling a flight only something that an admin at the airline actually can go do? Or perhaps an admin at an airport? Just rescheduling a flight, is that actually showing that a flight has been delayed for all 240 passengers? Is it completely different than somebody actually moving themselves to another flight? Okay, so this is sort of a silly extreme example, but not really, because I worked with a large airline and we had language problems just like this that I've talked about before. This is why it's so important to define our objects before we start talking about what various user roles might do to those objects. Because when we're designing complex software collaboratively, we want to know what the other person actually meant by flight. Or segment, or leg, okay? All these words just get thrown around, and we need to really get clear definition on these. So segment and leg, are those synonyms, or are they fundamentally different when it comes to how flights are scheduled and routed and priced? Like, how do segments and legs make up a flight? What is the relationship between those? That's why we start with the objects and, very often, the relationships before we get into the CTAs, because the relationships also further define the objects. Okay, how does segments and legs fit in with each other, and how do they fit in with this larger thing of flight? And then, I mean, I can throw out, there's more, you know, like route. Like, how is a route different than a flight? How is a trip different than a flight? All right, figuring out the definition of all of these things makes it so much easier and more productive, a much more productive exercise to figure out what kind of actions are going to happen in this system. If we're really clear on what those things are that users are doing those actions to. Okay, so the Orca process is really flexible. Sometimes it shakes down to be the Okra process. So we're actually moving the C up, but usually we're getting the objects and then the relationships and then the Cs and then the CTAs and then the attributes. Sometimes it can actually even be ORAC. I've done that before, where we do the objects, the relationships, then jump into object mapping with the attributes and then finish up with the CTA. Sometimes CTAs at the end actually works really well, but ORAC is, you know, not as good of a acronym as Orca. And often bringing those CTAs up before you get into the attributes tends to work better, but for various reasons, which I'm not going to get into. Sometimes switching it up works too. So it is very, very flexible, but I always put objects first. Oh, the O always starts out. Because how do I define relationships until I figure out the objects? And like I was just saying, how do we really get into calls to action? How do we get into interactions before we really know what the objects are? It just doesn't become a very efficient process. And of course, attributes. I mean, you can start talking about attributes, but then it's like, what is this attribute actually an information for, right? Is the price, what does the price tag really go on? Does it go on the ticket or does it go on the flight? No, it actually is going to go on the ticket because the ticket is what's assigned to the seat, which is assigned to the flight. Okay, so you can take the attribute of price, and if it's not really attached to an object, it's not incredibly meaningful. So objects first. But let me make something clear, all right? This does not mean the entire product design process starts with objects, because Orca is not the entire product design process. I've never claimed it to be, okay? This is not, I say this all in like a broken record, but if you haven't heard me say it, I'll say it again. This does not replace your current process. This enhances your current process and makes your current process stronger, okay? We still need research. We still need interaction design. What this does is, this creates this nice third diamond between the double diamond to take that research and discovery in, turn it into structure so that then we can hang that design on that really nice solid structure. Okay, so yes, you want to start with the problem. You want to start with a very clear job to be done, if you like that term, or super outcome. You want to start basically with the transformation you're hoping to give your users. Right? Are they going to become more healthy? Are they going to be more socially connected to their neighbors? Are they going to be able to travel stress-free? Right? And yes, that high-level goal definition that comes from all this good research and market insights, that is often quite verby. It often gets into adjectives too. So like verbs and adjectives there. So as a UX designer doing the Orca process, you might even create or inherit a journey map, a service blueprint, some very high-level user stories, an executive vision document, and those are going to include lots of verbs and adjectives, usually based around hopefully an end user or target market, right? Like what does that person want to achieve, right? And often the thing that they want to do, want is a strong word. It's the thing that they need to do to get to something that they want, all right? Users don't really want to do much. None of us want to do much. We just want to be the thing, right? We just want to travel stress-free. But there's nothing that, we don't want to book a flight ticket, right? There's nothing that's like, I want to book a flight ticket. No, it's annoying, right? I have to book the flight ticket so that I can travel stress-free, right? These are the things that I need to do. These are means to an end. But yes, we want to start with that transformation that's going to occur for a certain group of people. Basically, we want to start with, how are we going to help them? What is the problem and how do we think at a very high level might we solve that problem? So if you go back to number one in this series where I talk about noun foraging, I'm going to remind you, I talk about it a lot then and I'll say it again now, Orca is a garbage in, garbage out process. Without good research, without good vision, without good problem definition, without good market research, this process is going to give you an elegant, usable, object-oriented product that perhaps nobody wants. Okay? Garbage in, garbage out. Okay? CTAs, as we define them in this process, are not these super outcomes, not these goals, not these high-level jobs to be done. The CTAs that we're talking about in the Orca process, these are the tasks. These are the means to an end, right? They identify the actions that a user might need, not necessarily want, but might need to take on an object to achieve that outcome. Okay? So, for the record, all those objects that we defined first are the things that a user expects to interact with while they are achieving that super outcome in a given problem domain. All right, so all those O's and R's and C's and A's are in service of what research shows people actually want to achieve, want to become. That's why there's so many checks and balances in this process to make sure that we can really articulate the purpose of each of these pillars. So in the O's, we talk about what gets a little bit more when we get deeper into requirements, but we make purpose statements for all our objects. We make sure we articulate a why for all of our CTAs. We really get into the mechanics of all our relationships, making sure we understand how that actually happens and how are those useful, right? So we really make it very clear that we don't have a bunch of stuff entering into the product that people don't actually want. It all needs to kind of ladder up to that high level super outcome. Okay, so to reiterate, our CTAs they're like the handles on the objects that let people manipulate those objects so that they can achieve some hopefully very research validated goal. So CTAs also are just the calls to action, not the full interaction. So in Orca, we're really just cataloging those CTAs to create this lovely organized to-do list for detailed interaction design. Okay, so how is the user calling the user to action? All the stuff that happens basically behind the button or behind the icon where the user triggers that action. That's the call to action, right? Where like that's that trigger. All that interaction design, that happens later, right? Those are the tools that you already have. That is not part of the Orca process, okay? We're just making sure we understand what do people expect to be here? What objects do they expect to have in this world? What matches their mental model? And then what are the things that are going to be most useful for them to do to those things? The detailed interaction design is going to come later. But the cool thing is we can actually validate that first in testing to make sure, like, okay, are these the things that people want? And is this what they want to do to those things? Once that's validated, then we can do all the complex work behind that button or call to action, where we get all the interaction design, and we get all those flows, and we get all those edge cases, and we get all that conditional logic that happens when people start actually interacting with the system. So in discovery, we get this really nice catalog of CTAs, and then in the requirements round, which I will get to sometime next year, we can pass back through the sea of the Orca, and we add further definition that actually makes for really great object-oriented user stories, really detailed user stories. So the other thing I will say, the other caveat is, of course, objects are not more important, all right? Objects, these actions, CTAs, events, attributes, relationships, I should say that in order, right? These objects, the relationships, the CTAs, and the attributes, they are equally important, okay? They are four pillars of the Orca process, all holding everything together. They get equal love. I just need to get the basic understanding of my objects first, and actually, in the beginning, the understanding of those verbs, the relationships, the attributes, it's all in service of further defining the object, all right? And then those clear objects, those really help define the flows, the interaction design, all that, all those good task flows that happen once I get really clear on what my objects are. Okay, so if you're not convinced yet, I'm going to get to my, did I already tell you that I'm going to give you 8 tips? I think I told you that. I'm getting to that. I promise I'm getting to that. But really, I just really want to convince you why objects have to happen first. So here's my main 3 reasons. One, this is how people think. Okay, I'm not going to get into all my backup on this is how people think. Read my articles on it. So you can do a Google search of the object-oriented user or a Google search of don't dead him. We'll put the links in the show notes too, but I've done a lot of research on this. People think in objects, all right? This is the foundational piece of understanding. If you go into a space and you don't know what the objects are, good luck getting anything done. All right. Second, definition of terms. Let's go back to that flight, leg, segment, trip, route, ticket. Okay. What is the thing that the end user cancels? And what is the thing that they might replace? What do you check the status of? Okay, depending on if you're a traveler, a pilot, or an air traffic controller, you could be doing different things to those things. So again, definition of terms. Like, if I just say all those words to you, you really don't know right now. I mean, especially like leg and segment, okay? This is going to be probably not really important to the end user, but those are actually, to the traveler, right? But those are actually very important to someone that is designing flight routes, okay? And potentially editing those flight routes on the fly as, you know, hurricanes are happening or things like that. Okay. So another example is if you explain, let's say, soccer to an alien, you really can't start taking them through rules and plays, and definitely not something like offsides, until they understand concepts like teams and players and a ball and a goal and a field and how all that stuff basically relates to each other. You absolutely have to define the thing before exploring what you can do to the thing. That said, sometimes new objects will pop up during the Sea of the Orca process. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Okay, number three. This is an interesting one that I just recently thought of. Can you have a system without CTAs? Without actions or events? You sure can. This is called a content-only site, all right? CNN, where I never log in, right? CNN, unauthenticated site, I don't think you can log into CNN. I don't know. I haven't been on CNN in a while, but when I was working there, there was no login. All right, you really couldn't do anything. Cancer.org, last time I looked, I had somebody that was working with me that was working on cancer.org. It was just an informational site. Okay, OUX.com, unless you're a strategist and you can log in and you can do some things to edit your profile. But for the most part, OUX.com, there is just one or two CTAs, right? Sign up for our newsletter, buy one of our products, okay? Which I hope you do. Right, so you could have an entire site and really there's just one macro CTA of give us your email address or sign up for a demo, okay? And sometimes you don't even have to have that, right? It could simply be an informational site. It could start off as an informational site, all right? A lot of people's blogs are like this, okay? So yes, you can have a system with actually many, 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 many objects that all interact with each other, and no CTAs actually might come later, okay? You can launch and have something that's valuable without any CTAs, all right? But can you have a system without objects? Or without any information. Now, you can have a system that's just like a brochure site that there's no instantiated objects, right? That you don't have any CMS backing. But can you have a system of only actions or events? Eh? I mean, I don't think so. All right. And this is why, I mean, tell me, let me know on LinkedIn, like, can you think of any kind of system that is all actions? And you're not doing anything to a thing? I would love to know if you can think of anything. And so this is why so many content strategists and information architects and content designers freaking love Orca and enroll in my program, because we start getting getting really, really deep and clear on the content and the data and the information right away. Okay. All right. So I'm about to get into my 8 tips, but first, let me read you one more testimonial for the OUX certification program. And I just want to jump in and remind you that as of now, doors are open to cohort 9. Spots are going fast, but you can still get a spot. Come hang out with me. Hang out with me for 10 weeks. It's going to be awesome. All right. Here's what Alesh H. had to say. I first heard about OUX about 2 years ago. I immediately liked the idea and I started listening to the OUX podcast, hello, and reading almost all the material that was publicly available. I was sure that OUX would help me become a better digital product designer. So I enrolled in the OUX certification course and I was delighted with the amount of material and extremely detailed Orca process designed by Sophia. She exceeded all my expectations, thank you. Although complex, the course was well laid out and not difficult to follow. The tasks are well designed and made it easy to understand and follow the whole process. Now that I've gone through everything, I can't wait to start putting the newly acquired knowledge into practice. Sophia is a great teacher and has created a great OUX community full of extraordinary individuals that are always ready to help beginners. I recommend the OUX course to everyone who wants to be a better UXer and solve complex problems with greater efficiency and less headache. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Alish. I really appreciate that. So I also have to say, if you are more, a lot of these testimonials that I've given today are from director level folks and senior level folks. If you are more of a mid-level or junior, this course is the path to up-leveling your work to senior level in record time, giving you the confidence to pull up a seat at the table. So just go to OUX.com/testimonials and search confidence or whatever, content, developers. We have so many freaking testimonials now that we are recently added a keyword search field. So in fact, about 99% of folks who go through the certification process write a glowing testimonial. So I wonder what your transformation story might sound like, eh? Yeah, what will you be writing near the end of the year? So if you're ready to end this year, 2023, with a major turning point in your career, new energy into your career, firing on all those cylinders, go to oaux.com/certification. All right, let's get to my 8 tips for CTA discovery. So the main activities in CTA discovery is defining roles and setting up a matrix of roles by objects. So the CTA matrix, I want you to picture objects listed across the x-axis and roles listed down the y-axis. And the cells in this matrix are basically where you list all the CTAs available to that role for that role to do on that thing. Okay? So since we already have defined our objects, right? My first tips are actually all on role definition. So number one, define your roles, not personas. So of course you want to define your personas, but for this in your CTA matrix, don't put personas in your CTA matrix, put roles, because roles help us get into permissions. Personas are great, but the system doesn't usually know what the persona is of the person logged in, but they definitely know their role. Okay, so personas are almost like sample instances of a user object. So for me, for example, I might have Jake, the design lead with a developer background, or Mandy, the super sharp junior designer that loves getting into complexity, or Kristen, the senior UXer working in enterprise who is tired of myopically UXing screens and wants to go deeper into the systemic issues of the product she works on. Okay, so these are all personas in my little world. But in my system, they will all have the role of cohortion, somebody enrolled in a cohort, okay? So personas are great when you're figuring out who you're trying to help, and they very well might map to roles. So a role can have many personas, and a persona can even have many roles that they could possibly be. But in the CTA matrix, stick with roles, because one of the biggest things that the CTA matrix is helping you do is get into permissions. And this can get really messy. If you're, even sometimes I'll see people with CTA matrix where some of the roles are actually roles and some of the quote unquote roles are actually more personas, and it just turns into a squishy mess. And if the Orca process does anything, it turns squishy messes into not squishy messes. So we don't want to make a squishy mess. Okay. Number two, start with the system level roles or the highest level object relative roles that make sense, and recognize the difference between a system level role and an object relative role. Okay, so we talk about this more in the course, but for example, in Spotify, probably the system level roles are end user, right? There might be like paid end user and unpaid free user. Likely some sort of content curator and perhaps an admin role and probably a whole lot others in the backend system. But those are just from a wild guess. Those are probably system level roles in Spotify. But on a playlist, which is an object within the Spotify system, I can also be an owner or a collaborator or a subscriber to a playlist. So those would be object relative roles. Okay. So I can be a free user that is also a collaborator on this playlist, but this other playlist, I am just a subscriber to, and this other playlist, I'm an owner, right? So my role actually depends on which playlist we're looking at. So this can actually get complicated, and it's just something to be really aware of when you're defining your roles to not kind of mix these up, all right? So what if I'm designing a tool like Notion? So in Notion, I can be the admin or a member of a workspace. But y'all, workspace is an object. It's just a very high level object, but it definitely has instances. I have 8 workspaces right now in my Notion, and some I'm an owner of and some I'm a member of. So those are actually object relative roles, but I still might choose to start there because I'm only modeling objects within the workspace object. But what I wouldn't do here is dive into roles for the page object within Notion, which can also have roles like full access, editor, comment, and viewer. Okay, So getting really clear on when you're defining your roles in your CTA matrix, make sure, are we talking about these system level roles? That's usually a good place to start. Or if you're like, okay, everything I'm doing is within this workspace object, I'm going to define the roles of that object relative level. That's basically the system that I have control over, right? The system that I'm thinking about is all within the workspace. So my roles might be owner, collaborator, or what did I say? Full access editor, comment, or viewer, and probably owner too on the workspace. Hopefully that makes sense. Okay, but that's a thing. It's a thing. System level roles versus object relative roles. So number three, a little bit more on those object relative roles. Here's a way that you can do this. Now, this works best on paper or on something like Whimsical, where you're not actually in a spreadsheet. But what you can do is you can split your cells in your CTA matrix even further. So if I have the intersection between playlist and paid user, okay, in my Spotify CTA matrix, I might split that one cell. I might zoom in and split it up further into owner, collaborator, and subscriber. Okay, right now in spreadsheets, there's not a really great tool to do this. So this works much better if you're on analog sticky notes or something like Mural or Miro or Whimsical, where you have digital sticky notes and you can kind of do that and zoom in and sort of like actually have a, it's almost like you have a matrix inside of a matrix. Okay, number four, also on role definition. All right, consider the system or the AI as a role. All right. So, does the system do stuff? This is something that you might actually want to track. Okay. So, does the system create anything? Does it automatically flag anything? Does it automatically archive things? Does it merge things? Because if it's doing that, you really want to be thinking about what the triggers are for that. Okay. That is part of UX design. All right. What makes sense? For things to automatically happen, what are the triggers? Can users design those triggers? Oh my gosh. So it can often be really useful to track these actions and send them through the rest of the Orca process so you actually can get into the requirements round of these automated actions that happen through the AI. Now, CTA then becomes a little bit of a misnomer because there's not actually a button there, right? So that's cool though. All right, we're all smart people and I think we can handle that. This is almost like, would this be events in something like event storming? Maybe. Maybe. Let me know. Let me know on message me on LinkedIn. But I think this is more of, what do I think? This is more of things that the these would be, I think these would be events. Let me know. What do you think? And we can kind of put that into the CTA matrix. I think the CTA matrix is strong enough to hold something like that. Actually, I know it is because I've seen it done before and I've done it. Okay, so the system as a role. Ah, interesting. All right, number five, watch out for new implied objects and thus scope questions. All right, so yes. We start with the objects, but this is a cyclical process. And sometimes CTAs on objects lead us to additional, usually secondary objects. So, somebody, let's say we have trip as an object, and one of our stakeholders says, "Oh, we want to, users want to be able to review a trip. That's an action on a trip." Uh-oh, we need a review object now. Okay? Or let's say we're working on a fitness app and somebody says, "Oh, they need to be able to message the trainer." So trainer is an object. Now we put message as a CTA on the trainer. We probably need a message object. Okay, because if we think about SIP, going back to that number one episode and hopefully SIP, right? Structure, instances, and purpose. Okay. A message and a review has got structure, it's got instances, and it's got a purpose. Okay. All right, so watch out for those. This is a great way to reel in scope. So it's really easy to just throw on a review, like review this trip button. But we need to think about the structure of that review. Okay, what are all the attributes of the review? How do reviews work? Is it a star rating system? Is it an upvote or is it a downvote? How much can people write? Is there a character limit? Are they anonymous? How does it relate to other stuff? Does it have its own CTAs? Like, can people edit the review? Can they remove their review? are there moderators of this review? Does the system automatically flag reviews based on people reporting it as inappropriate or something? Like, it's this whole bag of worms. Every object is a whole bag of worms, or a potential whole bag of worms. So this is a really great thing to watch out for and kind of create a parking lot for and decide. So if you are in a workshop and you've gone through your object definition, you've gone through the nested object matrix, you're in the CTA matrix and a new object comes up, this is where you need to decide, like, are we parking lotting this? Parking lotting this right now, or do we need to go back and add it to our nested object matrix? Do we need to add a column and a row for review and see how it hooks into everything else? Right? Do we need to pop back? Yes or no? These are good questions to be asking. All right. So, really great for scope, and to just have that conversation. Is this in or is this out, right? Like, we can't have review as a CTA without review as an object. We can't have message as a CTA without message as an object. It just doesn't work. All right, number six. For right now, usually I will glom together CRUD, which is create, update, delete. Yes, read is in there too, but read is a weak CTA. We're going to talk about that in number seven. So usually I'll just put CRUD. And I'll examine it more in requirements. Well, then we'll break it out. We'll break out create. We'll break out update. We'll break out delete. But in discovery, 9 times out of 10, I'm just going to put CRUD on one sticky note and say, okay, this is who does the crudding for this particular object. Unless some CTAs under update really need to be broken out, like update status versus update profile. Okay, so updating your profile, like changing your name, changing your picture, adding your bio. I will update, I will glom that all together for sure. I will not make that separate CTAs because I wouldn't do that in the UI. It would just be like edit my profile and then I would edit all those attributes that my profile, but I would probably in the UI have a separate, I would have a separate CTA for updating status because that might be something that I do 3 or 4 times a day or something like in a warehouse system, you might have update inventory versus update product. So updating product, like switching the picture out for the product or the description or the SKU, like very rarely would that happen. But updating inventory might be something that would happen, you know, at the beginning and end of every day or whatever your procedures are. Okay, so it also might be useful to dig in early and to create an update if different roles might be doing this. All right, so again, usually I glom it together, but if I have a hunch that things might be a little bit more complicated, I will ask deeper questions upfront during discovery instead of waiting until the requirements round, where I kind of usually break all that out, but sometimes you got to get into more detail earlier on. So another example of create and update being different roles. So one example from RoboCoach, which is a design challenge that we did during cohort 8. We had exercises. The exercise object was created by the AI, but edited and deleted by the athlete. And that was something that not defining that early on actually created a whole lot of headaches for some of the folks working on that because they didn't define that early on, right? The difference between those two. So we kind of had to loop back around to it. And it was a really great learning moment of like, oh, this really defines this thing that the exercise is created by the AI. But the athlete can come in there and here's what they can edit about it and they can actually delete it. Or is it deleting it or they just skip the exercise? All right, number seven. Just a reminder, OEUXers, focus on the strong CTAs and skip the weak ones. All right, most of you who have been through my programs, hopefully all of you that have been through my programs know this or even been through my Udemy course or even watch an intro video, you might already know this, how I feel very strongly about separating strong and weak CTAs. So work out those non-transactional CTAs, the weak CTAs, the ones that are not actually manipulating the object. Work those out in sketching. They just clutter up the CTA matrix. So like sorting and filtering and like getting to the objects, attributes are going to handle that. We are absolutely covered on that. Don't put it in your CTA matrix. Unless consumption is actually this massive part of your system. So if a video player is part of your system, like if you work at YouTube or Vimeo or something like that, or Searchy, oh, please, 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 please put things like making sure that there's a 15 second forward and a 15 second back button, right? Add those to your CT matrix. And the I guess the moral of this story is, in the end, do what is useful to you. It might actually be useful, as much as I am adamant about this and I say, don't, you know, skip the weak CTAs. If it is useful for you to put in those weak CTAs, put them in there, okay? Totally cool. OEUX police are not going to come after you. This is true for the entire process. Do what is useful. You're going to, if you come into one of my programs, you are going to learn all the rules, and then you're going to learn how to bend them, and then you're going to go out into the real world, and you are going to need to break them here and there. Okay, you're going to need, that is the art of it, right? That's going into a certain scenario and realizing, ah, this is how I can extend the CTA matrix to make it work for me in this particular situation. So usually, I would say even like 99 out of 100 times, cataloging all the combinations of sorting and filtering does not seem like a good use of time for me. That does not belong in the CTA matrix. But if you have a very specific view or grouping requirements that might help lead you to attributes, then go for it. So in this particular, like really what I'm talking about is if someone in your workshop starts shouting out, like you're in a CTA workshop, you're facilitating a CTA workshop, which I'm going to talk about on number 8. And somebody starts shouting out weak CTAs that are kind of like these list level CTAs, like show the most popular or view by status on a map or something like that. Like, so just showing it, shouting out this stuff that like doesn't, in your OEUXE minds, like that doesn't really belong in the CTA matrix. Go ahead and grab those. Go ahead and put them in there. This can help you know in your object mapping that you're going to need popularity as an attribute. You're going to need status as an attribute. You're going to need location as an attribute. You're eventually going to need a map view. So it might not actually make it into the CTA matrix spreadsheet, you know, that we use in CTA requirements, but it's great to go ahead and grab it during the workshop, all right? It's totally fine to get that those weak CTAs in there if people are calling them out. Don't, you know, don't squash the enthusiasm, right? And say, no, those are weak CTAs. Often when I'm running this with clients, with stakeholders, with non-designers, I don't even get into the difference between strong and weak CTAs, right? It's only when somebody starts saying like, we need to filter by this and we need to filter by that and we need to sort by that, I might capture a few of them and say, oh, we're going to tackle all those filters and sorts in a lot more detail when we get to object mapping in the next step. And usually they're fine with that. Cool? Cool. All right. This brings us to number 8. Bring your team in to OEUX with a 1-hour CTA matrix workshop. This is actually a great way to introduce a team to OEUX because it's really getting into those actions, which a lot of, especially for UX designers, we're usually more used to that. The task flows, the things that people need to do to those things. It's getting into that interaction design. It's that kind of tip of the iceberg of interaction design that could be feel a whole lot more in the comfort zone of your team. So one way to do this is you might start with 10 objects that you know are objects within your system. Give instance examples. That always helps. Give a definition if you can. Do some dot voting. So first 10 minutes, dot voting to pick the 5 objects. So giving a good sense of control on which objects we think are the most important, which is great information to have overall. So get the team to pick the 5 objects. Start discussing roles, maybe talk a little bit about personas versus roles, discuss what are the roles, and start off with like 2, maybe 3 roles, those really macro ones. And then lead the discussion through each cell. Or what you can do is if you have a bigger group of people, if you have like more than 6 or 7 people, that kind of like one big discussion sort of starts breaking down. So you can give groups an object to work on. Like you can, if you're online, you can do this in breakout rooms or just go to different parts of the room. And if you're in person, and give them an object and give them 10 minutes to brainstorm CTAs for that object for each role. And then you can kind of do this in rounds and compare. Super fun. And it's a really great way to kind of break the seal on this object-oriented thinking. All right. So if you are interested in really learning how to create a CTA matrix and all the other pieces that go into this super professional UX toolkit that the worker process is, y'all, grab a spot in cohort 9. As Jacob said, my only regret is that I didn't do this sooner. And remember what Nicole B said, I wish I'd done this 7 years ago. So life is always going to be busy. It might never feel like the perfect time. But if you truly want to start making your life in the digital product world easier, more fun, even more fulfilling, come on in. Let's hang out. So I hope to see you in cohort 9. And until then, happy OUXing.
Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode. Please visit objectorientux.com/podcast for show notes. Our soundtrack is Fighter by Ruby Vell, courtesy of Sugaroo Records. Happy OUXing!